I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. It's been a week since Hurricane Maria devastated Puerto Rico that had been made vulnerable by the winds and heavy rains of Hurricane Irma. The situation has been described as dire, a humanitarian crisis with the 3.4 million residents who are American citizens struggling with a lack of electricity, as well as shortages in food, water, medicine, and fuel. And while there have been deliveries of some of these supplies, logistics have made it tough to get them to the people in need, especially those in rural areas. Patricia Mazzai is a writer for the Miami Herald and has reported from Puerto Rico and joins us on Radio Times. Patricia, nice to have you with us on the show. Do we have her? Okay. Patricia, do we have you on Radio Times?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, that's great. I'm looking at a story you wrote a couple of days ago, What Hurricane Maria Taught Me About the People of Puerto Rico. How are the people coping?
Well, the initial shock did not get in the way of their generosity and kindness. I mean, people were offering us, the reporters, cold water bottles, even though they had very little to go around, because they were so grateful that we were there. I mean, the first thing they asked us if we were from FEMA.
Right.
And when we said no, they were very disappointed, but they were just eager to let the world know what had happened to their towns.
And now, a week later, how are they coping, would you say?
Well, the governor has said that they're on a brink of a humanitarian crisis if they don't get the supplies in. And outside of the capital of San Juan, the situation is dire because there are impassable roads, because there is no communication, and because it is very difficult to fly in and bring in ships to supply these places.
Does that mean that there are ships waiting to unload, or even airplanes waiting to unload supplies for the people?
It means that the traffic to get in and out of the island is difficult because the navigational systems for both ships and planes have been damaged. And so they can't dock at night, for example, in the port of San Juan until they fix some of their navigational infrastructure. The airplanes have to be spaced out for security purposes because a long-range radar system is out. And so, you know, these are just a lot of logistical challenges that are unique to Puerto Rico because it's an island. This is not Texas after Harvey or even Florida after Irma in that, you know, you can't bring anything in by road. You can't bring in trucks.
We've seen people standing in lines for hours to get cash out of the ATM machines, people waiting to get fuel, to get gas for their cars. I was reading about grocery stores tightly controlling who can go in and out for fear that there could be some kind of chaos. How are local officials doing addressing the crisis in Puerto Rico?
They have been pretty overwhelmed. I mean, I don't think there's any way around that. This is just the magnitude, the enormity of the damage is just so extensive. We saw a lot of police while we were there, and some National Guard helping direct traffic in San Juan, but outside of the capital, that was just less common. I mean, you need police to escort some of these gas tankers in some cases, right, for the same security reasons. You need federal help to make sure there is security at the gas stations that do have gas. And so there is no way you can have these agents at every single grocery store, every single gas station. It's just impossible. And there is going to be lines for a long time, I fear, because there is no power. And they estimate it will take 4 to 6 months for it to return. And for now, most places also don't have running water. So there's a public health concern there, too.
I want to pick up on that, but you mentioned the fact that early on people were asking whether you were from FEMA. Did you see evidence of FEMA on the ground?
We saw that they went to one of the worst-hit neighborhoods west of San Juan, Toa Baja, that was flooded. There was flash flooding from a river the night after the storm, and we saw that they went there to help, certainly to help rescue people from their rooftops. But while I was there, there was not like, you know, you would expect the place to be flooded with help from the outside, with people in uniforms and looking very official. And that was just not the case. And the government had said, you know, 72 hours before we can respond to anything. And people were really girded for the fact that it was going to take longer than that.
I believe FEMA said there's something like 10,000 people on the ground, and people in Puerto Rico are saying that is not enough.
you know, I don't know what the number is that would be enough at this point. This is going to be a long-term proposition. This is not just, you know, search and rescue at this point. This is really, you know, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is getting involved to deal with the power grid. I mean, this is going to take a long time, and I don't know what the number is, but I know that the people outside of San Juan were hoping to see more people more quickly.
Is there concern of some kind of a health, public health crisis? You see water, which has to be mixing with sewage and probably gasoline and fuel. What's the status of that? Do you know?
Well, the government hasn't heard, as of yesterday, had not heard from all of the hospitals on the island to know what their status was. A handful of them were open. They had designated one major hospital in San Juan to kind of be the central place for traumas, and they were really working to restore all of the services to that hospital so that at least they could have one major center operating at full capacity. I did interview one physician at one point after the storm who said he was incredibly concerned about the public health crisis for the reasons you mentioned and also for mosquitoes. You know, standing water will breed mosquitoes, and then there's a host of diseases that can be associated with that as well. So, you know, like I said, it's kind of like compounding problems one after the other, and it's hard to know where to even start.
And I thought of Zika when you said that, a public health potential crisis if there's standing
sure.
water.
Yeah.
What's this? There was a dam that was being written about and concern that it could collapse and concern about people living downstream, I guess, from the dam. Is there an update on that?
Well, the dam in question has a crack in it that they knew about before the storm, but that now, because the levels of water were so high, it actually posed a real threat that it could burst the dam open. And some 70,000 people who live in the surrounding towns could lose their water supply if the dam were to erupt. And that was the key concern. That does not mean all those people were being evacuated. They were only moving the people who lived really close to the river downstream. The Washington Post had a report about how the dam has not been inspected for a long time. The local officials there told us that they had a study a couple of years ago that said that the crack did not pose an immediate threat. But, of course, that study did not take into account that the water levels would be as high as they are now.
And how much of the fact that a fair amount of the infrastructure in Puerto Rico is vulnerable, whether dams and other parts of infrastructure, also there's this looming debt crisis. How has that made Puerto Rico even more vulnerable to the storms that devastated so much of the island?
It seems pretty obvious that the governments were financially strapped. As an example, I can tell you that one of these towns near the dam, Quebradillas, the mayor and emergency manager said they had one functioning radio to communicate during the storm to the nearby big city, Arecibo, and sometimes to the capital, San Juan, if they could get through. But that was the only communication system they had, so they had to send someone in person to the capital after the storm to ask for a satellite phone. Because they didn't have means of communication. And the governor said there was a rudimentary system in place, and that basically entailed having an employee from each municipality go to the Capitol and back every day just to bring news back and forth because it was the only way they could communicate. So we're talking about really just basic information taking a while to get through because you're waiting for people to drive back and forth. And in the process, they're consuming fuel, which is in a shortage, right?
President Trump finally, frankly, tweet on Monday night about the crisis in Puerto Rico. Is there any way to gauge, first of all, whether if people are so cut off from the outside world, whether people in Puerto Rico knew what the president was or wasn't doing? But what do you think is the impact? And he says he wants to visit the island next week. What's the thought about the president himself?
There was one working radio station across the island during the storm that tried to keep people informed, and I'm not sure how much or how little coverage the president was getting. We were not hearing directly from people one way or the other about how they felt about the federal government. I think they would appreciate the attention. I didn't realize until I returned from Puerto Rico that the Maria devastation story was competing with so many other news items because obviously we didn't have great reception there either, so we didn't know what else was going on in the world. And so the attention that the governor has been clamoring for by saying these are 3.4 million American citizens who deserve the same treatment that anybody in the mainland U.S. would get. I think the president's visit, even though it's likely going to be a logistical challenge for Puerto Rico right now, would probably draw some of that attention that, the government over there has been asking for.
Do you have family and friends in Puerto Rico?
I have people that I know there. I don't have family there. I have to say the people were really resilient, and in the face of all of this catastrophe, they were really dedicated to rebuilding and saying that they want their island to return to what it was, and telling us foreigners, you know, to come back on vacation when things were back to normal. So they seem hopeful, but I think the longer it takes to restore basic services, the longer they go without food and water and medicine, the angrier we're going to see people get, because it's going to be natural for them to be frustrated.
And just to add to the complications, we're going to spend more time talking about the Jones Act later in the hour, but this is a federal law that requires or mandates, I guess, that only U.S. vessels are allowed into the ports of Puerto Rico. How is that complicating the recovery efforts in Puerto Rico?
You know, I don't know firsthand if it is or it isn't. Because of the navigational infrastructure having been damaged, it seemed to me like there was going to be a challenge there to begin with, no matter what. But I haven't reported firsthand on the Jones Act and wouldn't want to talk out of school about what it has or hasn't done. I know that Senator Marco Rubio, who went over there, has talked about how they need flexibility with federal rules in Puerto Rico because of the unique situation of it being an island. And let's not forget, they don't have representation in Congress because they're not a state. And so they're relying on people like Rubio and other representatives from especially New York and Florida, which have the highest populations of Puerto Ricans in the mainland, to speak for them and ask for money for them. And so that's an additional challenge that they face.
We're going to be talking with Puerto Ricans here in Philadelphia, a couple of them joining us here in the studio. And I'm assuming in Florida, Patricia, we're almost out of time here, but there are a lot of people in Florida with family and friends in Puerto Rico.
Yes, there are. There have been a lot of volunteers lining up to get supplies together to see how they can help their families back home. A lot of the Puerto Ricans we interviewed on the island were trying to get in touch with their families in Florida. And the school districts here have said they are prepared to take an influx of students if some families relocate from the island after the storm.
Well, Patricia Mazzei, thank you so much for your reporting and for joining us today on Radio Times.
My pleasure.
And she's a writer for the Miami Herald and has been reporting from and about Puerto Rico. We're going to take a very short break and then talk about local efforts here in the Philadelphia area to address the crisis, the humanitarian crisis in Puerto Rico. And we want to hear from you. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And do stay with us. Much more to talk about after this very short break. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. And we've been talking about the humanitarian crisis in Puerto Rico, reeling from two hurricanes that have devastated and in many ways destroyed much of the island. Here's a man at the airport trying to leave the island of Puerto Rico talking to NBC News.
I need to get out of here. Why? Because we feel desperate. It's not just me. This is a scary situation.
And here's a young woman worried about her mother, also talking to NBC News.
Oh, we're desperate. I have lived here like 35 years, and this is too much to handle. I haven't talked to my mom either, so I'm trying to go to my mom's house. It's sad.
And here's from CNN, a young girl talking about being evacuated.
I'm scared, like, what's going to happen now to us? Where are we going now? What's our family going to do now?
Well, many Puerto Ricans living on the mainland have family and friends in Puerto Rico and have been struggling to get and stay in touch. Puerto Ricans make up about 10% of Philadelphia's population. The Puerto Rican Day Parade on Sunday was both a fundraiser and a chance to raise awareness about the crisis on the island, which is a U.S. territory. Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens, something I do want to talk about with our guests, and let me introduce them to you. Dr. Carmen Febo San Miguel is Executive Director of Taller Puerto Riqueño. And Carmen, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Also with us is Marangeli Mejia Rabel, and she's Director of Community Economic Development at the Village of Arts and Humanities in Philadelphia, Director of the Philadelphia Latino Film Festival. Marangeli, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And Noelle Foizen is with us, and she's Deputy Director of Public Affairs for Emergency Management for the City of Philadelphia. Noelle, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you for having us.
You're very welcome. Let me begin with you, if I could, actually, Marangeli, because I know you have a niece who's, what, 8 months pregnant in
Almost
Puerto Rico?
Almost 33 weeks pregnant.
Well, have you been able to get in touch with her at all?
So, unfortunately, we have not been able to talk. We are blessed to have the opportunity to connect via text. She actually consulted her GYN yesterday. She has been clear to fly. Now it's a matter of the challenges booking a ticket, working through insurance to make sure that she can come and deliver. Right. My daughter and I are prepared to work with the alternative if that's what's needed. But it goes without saying that it's definitely the worst time for somebody to be in this situation. So it's been really, really tough.
Oh, I can only imagine. And wanting her to come to Philadelphia?
Absolutely.
That's the goal?
That's the goal.
Let me turn to you, Carmen. You have family in Puerto Rico?
Yeah, on a very personal level, I guess my family fared fairly well. They all live in the metropolitan area, but even them, the storm has impacted, you know, really negatively. And because it's such a crisis that has been fraught with so many obstacles, including, unfortunately, the slowness of response from the United States, from the federal government, the impossibility of the transportation networks, et cetera, et cetera, which compound the problem. You know, many are worried about how they're going to survive. I have a nephew that has a restaurant in San Juan. He doesn't know when he's going to be able to reopen. You know, so there's no source of income. I mean, this touches everybody, even those mm-hmm. That fared fairly well.
Sure.
In the, you know, they didn't lose their houses, although they don't have any electricity and no hope of getting it restored in, you know, in the immediate future, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And it seems that the rural areas, I mean, it makes sense, and so many have been cut off.
Correct.
You see the debris all over the road, what it would take.
Correct.
Even if you had supplies, how would you get them there? And parts of Puerto Rico don't have, your doctor, don't have clean potable water.
Correct. I mean, so the problems, you know, did not completely stop with the storm. Of course, rivers went off their courses and caused continued flooding. You know, villages that and towns that mm-hmm. had done well then were overflooded because of the rivers mm-hmm. overflowing, et cetera, et cetera. So the problem and will continue to get compounded because sure. of the issues that you present. No potable water, which means diseases and disease spread and hygiene and, you know, on and on and on and on. So this is a humanitarian crisis, and we, you know, are working really, really, really hard to see how we in the diaspora can yeah. become not only advocates, but really resources, send as many resources from our pockets, from whatever connections we can make with agencies like the Red Cross and Salvation Army, et cetera, to get resources to Puerto Rico.
And I want to pick up on that, Noel. Let me get you in on the conversation. Cities like Philadelphia, cities and communities across the country, obviously concerned about what's happening in Puerto Rico. What is Philadelphia doing?
Yes, so right now we are just ready and waiting to support as needed. We've expressed our desire to help in whatever way possible to the state and federal authorities. And so besides that, we're just helping to support all of our nonprofit partners that are trying to get personnel down for relief efforts, try to get supplies down there. It's a difficult mm-hmm. system to navigate. The infrastructure is completely devastated down there, and it's complicated because it's an island, so we can't drive things in. We have to fly things or ship them. The ports are not available to receive supplies down there. There aren't trucks to receive the supplies, so everything's extremely complicated with this recovery.
Are you waiting for FEMA to in a sense, give the word to say, okay, now we need your help?
Yeah, and so that's a really difficult spot for the city to be in because we just want to help with the recovery efforts. 75% of the Latino population in the city of Philadelphia is Puerto Rican. They're our fellow citizens. We want to help them, and we're ready and waiting to support that effort. We're developing plans, and so in case there are plans to relocate people to the city of Philadelphia, we're developing housing plans, disaster recovery centers. Right now, it's mostly just promoting the cause on social media, making sure that people understand there's fundraising efforts out there, encouraging people to donate cash instead of goods.
Things like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Marangeli, let me go back to you, and also to you, Carmen, and we do see people, as you mentioned, your niece wanting to get out of Puerto Rico so she can deliver her baby, but I've also heard other people saying, I just want to get out of here because life is too tough. I don't know what my future is. Is there concern that so many people will leave Puerto Rico that it won't be the vibrant place that it is or has been?
Oh, absolutely. And that also, it's not only who leaves, but what, and I understand we're definitely, you know, in a very difficult spot, but also then who comes in and what is that like, right? And what is the strategy of those that are going to come in? You know, people are desperate. And, you know, I have to mention the Katrina situation and what happened to that city. You know, schools were privatized. A whole bunch of other things trickle out of that disaster. A lot of people came for a free market and started gentrifying neighborhoods and stuff like that. So that's definitely a concern and has been a concern before the storm because of this PROMESA situation. Absolutely. And the fiscal oversight. And it's interesting, you know, going back, and I know you're going to talk about the Jones Act in a little while, but the fact that, you know, our colleague here is mentioning it is an island, it is difficult, should be the biggest reason why the Jones Act has to be waived. Actually, it should be repealed, but we can start with the waiver now, because it was waived for both Irma and Harvey to get oil to the East Coast. So, you know, the president made a statement yesterday where he said, well, it is an island. We can't drive trucks. Hmm. Okay, well, you have the Jones Act. You can do something about that.
Which means that more than just U.S. ships can bring supplies into the to the island of Puerto Rico. Let me put something else on the table, Joanna. And I'll put this to you, Carmen. I ran across a new survey. 54% of American adults know that Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens, which means that almost 50% do not know that. What does that tell us?
Well, this is part of the complexity of the political relationship of the U.S. and Puerto Rico, because on the one hand, because of all of these things that you've already mentioned, Puerto Rico are U.S. citizens, but they are second level U.S. citizens because they don't have Congress representation, because the island and the whole economic situation of the island is impacted by the Jones Act. And there are, experts that say that the loss of income to the island related to the Jones Act and the limitations that imposes and mm-hmm. the higher cost of living that imposes to Puerto Ricans is higher than the cost of the famous debt that has gotten so much attention. So, you know, it's a dire situation. It's an unequal and unfair situation to Puerto Ricans living on the island. And this is compounded now by two disasters back to back.
The two hurricanes that came.
The two hurricanes in a mainland where barely 50% of people know what that situation is about. And how can then, if we're going to have to rely on the public to put pressure and be advocates for mm-hmm. you know, fellow American citizens, when they don't know what the situation is, it's going to compound the problem even more.
Noelle, do you want to weigh in on this at all? This is the political part of it, but I think it also raises questions about who we think is American, and that seems like such a poignant issue these days.
No, definitely. And in emergency management, we try to operate outside of politics, so we just think about the human impact of disasters. And so and on my personal perspective, I think it shouldn't matter if they're U.S. citizens or not. Like, this is an area that was hit really hard by this disaster. They're really struggling, and we just have to provide as much support as we can as quickly as possible.
I heard the word refugees. I mean, describing people coming from Puerto Rico, coming to the mainland, and someone used the word refugees, and I thought, these are refugees. These are American citizens.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to weigh in? I see you nodding your head, Mary Kelly.
I think complicated is an understatement. You know, I will actually offer something that happened that was very innocent, but the level of disconnect is enormous. I was asked a couple of weeks ago, how was the DACA thing going for me?
How was DACA going?
And I was like, a little older, but I'll tell you, you know, apparently I look like a college student, but I understood. And in my reply to this person, who meant very well, she was just concerned for me, who's a neighbor and we like each other, was like, listen, I understand. I was a born citizen in a colony of your country, and I understand we're not a speck on your history books. And I understand that, you know, I learn about your wars, your history, your precedents, but you don't learn about me and where I come from. So I get it. I get it. So I think, again, and I don't, you know, I understand the priority now is to bring quality of life back to these people, you know, and make sure that our nation can rebuild, right? And we are U.S. citizens. But there's also the element of people being really aware. This is a big slap. I'm sorry to say that, but it is a big slap in the sense that there are a lot of people that are really feel very included in the American dream and feel very included in the way they see, you know, and defend this country and work for this country and work for this and all of this. And it's like, not as even keel as you thought it was.
Let me throw something else political in here. And Carmen, I'm going to put this to you. There was a referendum in June. 90% of the people who voted in Puerto Rico, and apparently the turnout was low, said they wanted statehood.
Well, I mean, if you consider that maybe only 50% of the people that voted voted, you know, so the reality is
seems
those
like
that
America,
voted
doesn't it?
seem to be the ones that, you know, that were pro the referendum. I mean, these referendums, you know, have happened on and on. Almost every time there's a new governor, there's a referendum. And there's such a waste of effort, time, and money, because the reality is that the final decision of the status and the economic and the political situation between Puerto Rico and the United States lies in the Congress. Mm-hmm. So no referendum is going to make any difference, right, whether it's 100% pro one form of status or another. And you know, the lobbying and the way to impact politically the, you know, the situation of Puerto Rico, and as Marangeli mentioned before, you know, an effort to repeal the Jones Act, which has been so unfair to the people of Puerto Rico, is with Congress and lies with Congress.
And apparently things cost twice as much on the island than they
the
do
cost
on the
of
mainland.
Living in Puerto Rico is twice as high, absolutely. And this is what, you know, what experts say. So the Jones Act has cost the economy of Puerto Rico much more than the famous debt that has, you know, been created because of, you know, maybe bad decisions, bad economic decisions. But the reality is that the Puerto Ricans would not be in this predicament if it weren't because of that.
Well, let me turn to you, Noelle. As Deputy Director of Public Affairs Emergency Management in Philadelphia, as you look at those pictures from Puerto Rico or hear those and see those news accounts, where do things start when it comes to recovery? Obviously, you want to get electricity up so people can communicate with each other, but you've got shortages of really basic supplies and materials. Where do you start there?
Yeah, so it's really difficult, actually watching the pictures come out and the footage that we're seeing and just the level of destruction. Because normally recovery starts at the local level, but locally, all of Puerto Rico has been devastated. And so there aren't roads, there's no supply chain to get the groceries to the stores, to get the groceries to the businesses that are trying to reopen. The first objective after a disaster is to reopen as quickly as possible so you can start injecting funds into the local economy, focus on recovery, and help the people there. It's going to be really difficult there. Mm-hmm. Their entire telecom system is down, can't communicate, they don't have electricity. Like, really basic things that would be starting to drive recovery there aren't there. And so it's my understanding that FEMA is on the ground and they're actively trying to improve all of those systems, but it's a huge effort. It's going to take a lot of resources. It's going to take a lot of time.
Yeah, like months and maybe years.
Definitely years. And so for most disasters, recovery, long-term recovery, is a couple years. The level of devastation there, I can definitely say it's going to take a couple years to recover.
And recover to what? I mean, how do you rebuild all that infrastructure?
Yeah, so ideally, locally, they're involved and they're having input. I mean, that's the best practice when it comes to disaster recovery, is that it's really driven locally. And mm-hmm. so ideally, those partners are at the table there. That's why we're waiting for a direction. Like, how can we support? We can't just insert ourselves into their recovery mm-hmm. efforts. But if they decide that it would be most helpful to send some people outside of Puerto Rico, even temporarily, so they can focus on those issues, we are ready mm-hmm. and waiting to take those people.
And you're waiting from the governor, from mayors? Who
are you waiting here from? And so the way it works, it's a state-to-state support. And so Governor Wolf knows that we're prepared and ready. There just hasn't been a request made mm-hmm. for that support.
And that's Noelle Foizen. She's Deputy Director of Public Affairs for Emergency Management for the City of Philadelphia. Also with us is Dr. Carmen Febo San Miguel, Executive Director of Talle Puerto Riqueño, which is here in Philadelphia. And also with us is Marangeli Mejia Rabel, Director of Community Economic Development for the Village of Arts and Humanities in Philadelphia, also Director of the Philadelphia Latino Film Festival, talking about the humanitarian crisis in Puerto Rico. And we have State Representative Angel Cruz waiting to join us after this very short break. And you can join us. Any questions or comments, that phone number 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. I see a lot of Jones Act comments here. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, and I've been talking with our guests on the show today about the humanitarian crisis in Puerto Rico. I'm sure you're aware of what is going on there. And we're going to put on our Facebook page, our website, places that you might want to consider a donation, including one that the City of Philadelphia and also Pennsylvania has gotten involved in. Joining us now is Angel Cruz. He's a state representative representing the 180th District here in Pennsylvania, which is part of Philadelphia. He's also president of the National Hispanic Caucus of State Legislators. Angel Cruz, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to share our grief that we're going through within Puerto Rico.
Well, I talked to our other guests about family, friends that they have in Puerto Rico. Do you have family and friends that you're concerned about?
I have lots of friends and a family that I have not been able to reach. I have 90-plus members of the House and the Senate that are under my organization, which I am the president of. So, that all concerns me, and how they're doing and what role do we play. And I understand that our stuff that is being sent there are there, but FEMA does not have the orders to go in just yet. We're waiting for clearance from our president. He wants to come visit on Tuesday, but I think Tuesday is too late. Mm-hmm. He should have gone in there yesterday. This is a crisis that's going. We have people that are not getting treatment in hospitals that are dying. People, they may even try to commit suicide because of the pressure that they see that they're going nowhere. And we got to understand that 90-degree weather with nothing to drink, the water is contaminated. Okay, the president needs to have been there the very next day after Maria, the hurricane, passed, so he can see the urgency that we have. So I call upon him, need be beg him to get to Puerto Rico. We need all the help that we can with FEMA, and people are the outpour of the generosity of the people that are wanting to take their clothes off their back just to help. We have materials, we have locations, we have people that are donating. We just need to get FEMA on its feet, out there, clear the roads, the U.S. Army, the National Guard to put patrol where it needs to for the looting and the riotings. We need to bring all that into place so we can go reach our loved ones.
Well, let me follow up on a couple of things there. Does the president need to go to Puerto Rico to declare a state of emergency and to get FEMA more involved?
Absolutely not. One phone call. Go in there and do what you got to do. We are a territory to the United States of America, no matter if we have a debt or not, because if these people, our people, my people, die because of this conditions that they're living, who's going to worry about a debt? Okay, we're worried about the debt later. We need to make sure that we respect people's civil rights, especially U.S. citizens. And all he has to do is make up the phone and says, go in and do what you have to do. And he has not done that yet. I understand you won your 5 minutes of fame, Mr. President, with all due respect, but my people need to be helped and saved now.
And what about Governor Wolf? What is the state legislature and the governor of Pennsylvania doing for Puerto Rico at this point? Are you just in a holding pattern?
No, everybody's in a holding pattern. Our governor and the state legislature is waiting for orders from the governor of Puerto Rico. We don't want to interfere, and this is a very important message. Everybody wants to volunteer. Everybody wants to do several things, but always keep in mind that the governor of Puerto Rico has 3.5 million people under his hand right now that he has to take care of their security and the safety of these folks. He does not need another 3.5 to go over there at worse than what it is. Everybody has to hold off, wait till we get our orders just like that. Everybody else in FEMA and are getting, we need them to clear the roads. We need them to do what we have to. Then we go in there and help them go up to the mountains and deliver the water, the food and everything and take care of everybody. So, everybody's willing to do whatnot. The only fear that I have is that the food and the stuff that we send to Puerto Rico doesn't go to supermarkets and whatever, and they start selling the stuff that is already donated for the people that are in need. We want to make sure that our people get what that belongs to them, because this is all donated, and that we don't have people selling stuff to people that are in need. That's all I care about.
Well, let me get our other guests in the conversation. We've got some folks that want to join us as well. As a physician, Carmen Fabio San Miguel, concerns about just the physical health, but also the mental health of people in Puerto Rico.
Oh, the amount of stress. I'm certain that lots of people are going to be then suffering from post-traumatic stress, because this has been a devastating, nature disaster, similar to earthquakes and other storms, I think that the priority right now for all of us is to try to get resources there. Obviously, the easiest but not also completely devoid of complications is to raise money. So that's what we are concentrating on. Because unfortunately we are on hold, on how to get all the other products. But medications, generators. I mean, people without electricity, as State Representative Cruz is saying, 90 degree weather with no electricity, no fans, no nothing, in the humidity of a tropical island. This is going to be prone for illnesses, as we mentioned, mosquitoes, dengue. A dengue epidemic is the worst thing that can happen. It is bad.
But I feel as if even with all the good intentions and even efforts, that it's not going to get there in time. It will get there eventually, but will it get there in time? Go ahead, Marangeli.
And that it will not. That's definitely a concern. There's also the concern that we're not in a position to put all of our eggs in one basket in terms of the type of relief. There's got to be something that happened at the same time where we are working with folks in the island, to start thinking about what food activism looks like. There's a group of folks across the diaspora that are also organizing and sending these eco kits, where you have solar panels and duffel bags and items that do not require electricity. Uh-huh. Let's talk about the mayor of San Juan, who says her biggest fear, which is our biggest fear, and I know Carmen and I have shared this, our immediate family has fared relatively well. But this is a life-changing event for our people. And I would say on both ends, because for us, it's change, everything. You know, you can hardly sleep, you're glued to the TV, your mind is somewhere else, you're not concentrating. This is really devastating. Mm. But it's how do we look at supporting those efforts that are going to get the immediate relief, but at the same time think very strategically about where we make our investments.
Sure.
So the country, the nation can rebuild on its own.
Yes, interesting. Yes, you want to add to that, Noelle, and then we'll get some callers.
Yeah, I just want to stress that if you're local and you're hearing these stories and you want to help, I highly recommend you make a donation to UNIDOS PAPR. It's a local coalition of organizations and elected officials that have come together to focus all relief efforts specifically on Puerto Rican disaster recovery.
And all the money goes?
And all the money goes directly to that.
Let me get, looks like Ellen from King of Prussia to join our conversation. Ellen, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
I'm calling because my brother lives in Puerto Rico, and I've been fortunate that we've been able to be in touch here and there. He told me yesterday that he's been working, helping out with the electrical grids. He lives in San Juan.
Right.
And so some things are gradually being restored, not water yet. He was luckier than most, as I said. His building, as he described, is built like a fortress. It's been around for a long, long time. And there was no damage. However, he was able to get out to Caguas, which is more toward the center of Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
And he had to take some alternate routes and all of that to see a property of his wife's family. And that property, although the structure was on, the roof was torn off, they lost all the trees in their in the yard. It's really a heartbreaking situation.
It sure is, Ellen. Yeah, and I appreciate the call to Radio Times, just sort of underscoring, I think, the images and pictures that we have seen. Let me read a couple of comments. We've gotten a tweet from Sarah. Much of Puerto Rico infrastructure and debt stems from the Jones Act, which needs to be waived and repeated, something we talked about earlier. An email from Marisol. I wrote to my representative, Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick, yesterday, asked him to support Senator McCain's efforts to waive the Jones Act. I have family in Ponce, Puerto Rico, and have not heard from them since the storm struck. And that's an email from Marisol. Angel Cruz, we were talking about this earlier before you joined our conversation, talking about the impact of the Jones Act on Puerto Rico. Where do you stand on that?
We need to remove that. We need to remove anything that blocks us from going into Puerto Rico and save Puerto Rico and the inhabitants in Puerto Rico. So, you know, I applaud Senator Kane on his actions, and I hope all his colleagues can follow his lead. And let's do what's necessary for the people of Puerto Rico. They need us now,
and
not mid-October, not later on, right now. So today, today or tomorrow, we're having a press conference with the congressional delegation in Philadelphia, hosted by Councilwoman Quiñones Sanchez in Philadelphia, and we're asking people to come. But just for support, not to make this a routing and shouting event, we want to send Congress the message that we're with them to do whatever is needs with the Jones Act or any act that keeps us from getting services and the proper needs to Puerto Rico. So, yes, I applaud Senator Kane, like I said before, on his actions.
Do you think, Representative Cruz, that Puerto Ricans are second-class citizens in the United States?
We're treated like the little black sheep that nobody wants at this moment. That's what I see, because we are a territory. If it was one of the 50 states, even though we're not one of the 50 states, we are a territory. Then, you know, the way they're treated, you know, we took care. We went in with Harvey. We went in with Irma. Here's Maria that destroyed the island, you know, and the Virgin Islands also, Española. Mm-hmm. But we need urgency, we need help. And I said in the House floor yesterday that I will continue repeating, as an American, proud American of Puerto Rican descent, I get up and pledge to the allegiance. Well, I'm tired of just saying empty words. I want to live out what the Pledge of Allegiance says. And the meaning of the Pledge of Allegiance is that when one U.S. American is down, the other one picks them up and helps them move on. Mm-hmm. So let's act on and show that America is not broken, that the only thing that is broken is Puerto Rico. Let's help our U.S. citizens what they deserve, the food, the treatment, and whatnot. That's what we need to be focusing on. Mr. President, police, if need be that we need to beg you, then that so be it. Puerto Rico needs you now.
And to our listeners, people, Puerto Ricans on the island, they cannot vote for president. They can vote in the primary. They do have a member of Congress, but that member does not vote. They pay a lot of taxes, not all of them, but a lot of them.
They fight in the wars.
They fight in the war. Just mm-hmm. to sort of underscore, because I think this is an opportunity for all of us to try to understand the mainland's relationship with Puerto Rico. And I don't want to put a happy face on what's going on there, but I wonder, even from your perspective, Marangeli, whether this is an opportunity for all of us to understand our history.
Absolutely. Not only to understand our history, but to now move into a new chapter of our history, right? And really, you know, separate ourselves. A lot of folks at times, and we are all humans, we make that mistake that connect to political affiliations, and then it's Carmen is my candidate and she can do no wrong and I'm going to follow her. No, you know, Carmen or any politician, they're humans. So it's about discourse. Mm-hmm. It's about really having a conversation about what the reality is. And again, it's about people from Puerto Ricans are very resilient. You know, we have a fighter spirit. We are very given. We are very loving. We got to love ourselves a little more and really invest. So, you know, again, very aware, very vigilant, and very intentional with every move that we make moving forward to bring relief, to rebuild, and rebuild in a way that it works for our people.
You know, one of the things you said, this is Representative Cruz, and
yes,
I apologize for jumping in.
No, go ahead.
Is that at this point, we're not Democrats, we're not Republicans, we're not Afro-American, we're not Hispanics, we're not nothing. The only race that counts here is the human race.
Yep.
It is a humanitarian issue, and let's do that by doing whatever little bit, any little grain of salt that you put into this that helps Puerto Rico. That's all we're asking for.
I'm giving you the last word, Carmen, and you have about 30 seconds.
I'm gonna, you know, underscore. So, Unidos pa PA PR.
Yep.
Unidos pa Puerto Rico. Unidos mm-hmm. for Puerto Rico. That is all we're asking. Go to our Facebook page. There's information there how you can help, how you can get involved, how you can donate, and you know, let's all get united under an economic and humanitarian crisis that is impacting 3.5 million Americans.
Yes.
We will put that all that information and probably some more on our Facebook page. We have to end our discussion. My thanks to all four of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Carmen Febo San Miguel, Executive Director of Taller Puerto Ricano, thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
You're very welcome. Also with us, Noel Foizen, Deputy Director of Public Affairs for Emergency Management for the City of Philadelphia. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Marangeli Mejia Rabel from the Village of Arts and Humanities, also Director of the Philadelphia Latino Film Festival. Thank you. And
gracias.
I hope your niece gets here.
Thank you.
And Angel Cruz, thank you for joining us as well.
Well, thank you for what you do to be able to help the people in Puerto Rico and getting the message out. Thank you.
You're welcome. State Representative in the legislature in Harrisburg since 2001, representing the 180th District. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Artie Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.